It was during his inaugural homily that Pope Francis made his first appeal for us to protect the world's environment. And when it comes to the environment of our planet, oceans play a vital role by providing most of the oxygen we breathe. They're also a major source of food and medicines and are a critical part of the biosphere. But in the last few decades, the threats to our oceans from pollution, overfishing and other forms of exploitation have increased dramatically. That's why the UN introduced World Oceans Day to raise awareness of the crucial role played by oceans and seas on our planet. This day is observed on June the 8th each year. Dr. Peter Richardson is the Biodiversity Program Manager at the Marine Conservation Society in the UK, and he spoke to Vatican Radio's Linda Bordoni.
I think World Oceans Day is important because it does provide organisations like ours, like the Marine Conservation Society, to highlight the problems that our seas and their wildlife are facing. But every day is World Oceans Day for us. Our seas are under great threat from various human activities, and there's plenty of work to do to try and fix some of the problems out there.
People must realise that if the seas are under threat, we are all under threat, right?
That's right. I mean, we all depend on the services of the sea for some reason. We either derive food from it, it's where we put our waste, or some of our goods from overseas come via the sea. So certainly in a country like the UK, we are very much a maritime nation and our history is very much, you know, bound to the sea. But in recent years, certainly the British public, I feel, have sort of become disconnected from the sea, and they consider it as a dark and dirty place where not much happens, whereas absolutely the opposite is true. We are still heavily dependent on sea, not only for food but for the other services, and our seas are highly productive. But the thing is that we've, you know, just like in other parts of the world, such as the Mediterranean and the US coast and various other parts of the developed world, we really have been hammering our seas for the last few hundred years. And now is the time to actually take stock and do something about it before we destroy them, you know, irreversibly. Of course, one of the big problems is overfishing and overexploitation of marine resources. And of course, there are some sort of moves to try and improve that. But that really is a big problem that needs to be sorted out. Of course, the other problem, which compounds the problems of overfishing and the other ways that we kind of overexploit our seas, is the threat of climate change. And climate change can have all sorts of impacts on the sea. It can completely change the oceanography. It can change the sea temperatures. And it can also lead to a phenomenon called ocean acidification, which, as the ocean absorbs too much carbon, it becomes more acidic. And that has profound implications for the ecosystems in the marine environment.
I was reading the other day of the puffins in the Atlantic who seem to be dying off because of this. The temperature of the ocean is changing, their food habits are suffering, and they are actually dying of hunger.
That's right, and the puffin is a kind of iconic marine species, but it's not just the puffins that are suffering. There are several other seabird species too whose populations are crashing and have been crashing over the last decade or so. The reasons aren't 100% clear, but it's almost certainly linked to availability of food. And what seems to be happening is that the prey species, the fish that they depend on, sand eels and small species like that, are being pushed further away by changing climates. Their habitats are sort of being pushed further away from where the seabirds traditionally range to collect food to feed their chicks. And so, yes, we're seeing seabird colonies having very unproductive years, which ultimately will threaten the survival of these species.
Another sea creature that's been in the news is the jellyfish. I read that there's been a glut of jellyfish in parts of the Mediterranean. Can you tell us why?
Yes, well, you know, jellyfish are great opportunists. They've been around for about 650 million years virtually unchanged, and they are very good at taking advantage of any opportunities that come their way. And what's been happening with the way that we treat our seas is that we seem to be creating better conditions for jellyfish. So, for example, by overfishing and taking out huge tonnages of fish from these marine ecosystems, we're not only taking away the fish that feed on the baby jellyfish when they're in the plankton, we're also taking away the fish that compete with jellyfish for food sources. So essentially, we're taking the pressure off the jellyfish by removing all these fish. And the jellyfish are very good at taking advantage of that. And they are blooming in various parts of the world. Here in the UK too, we've seen recent increases in jellyfish abundance, but particularly in the Mediterranean, where it seems to have been a phenomenon that's sort of come on over the last 10 to 15 years, where you're getting these large blooms of a species called Pelagia noctiluca. We call it the mauve stinger over here because it has a very, very painful sting. I mean, it's actually a beautiful creature, mauve and pink spotted, but you certainly don't want to find yourself swimming amongst them because their stings are agonizing.
Surely another major factor must be pollution. I've been reading of sea creatures that feed with their mouths open, so plastic bags are very dangerous, things like that.
That's right, but there are several issues with pollution. You have the diffuse pollution, which is, of course, the chemicals and the fertilizer and nutrients and whatever running off industrial and agricultural landscapes. They, of course, all go down drains and into rivers, and pretty much every river leads to the sea. So you get the sort of chemical pollution, which has impacts, particularly in closed bays. And incidentally, in closed bays that get heavy runoff from agricultural landscapes, that can actually lead to a phenomenon called eutrophication, where you get a build-up of algae which builds and builds and builds and then dies and then rots, and the rotting process starves the water of oxygen, so everything that requires oxygen in those ecosystems pretty much is wiped out. But there are some species like jellyfish that can deal with that very well, so that's another kind of opportunity that the jellyfish have taken advantage of in certain areas where you have eutrophication in closed bays. So chemical pollution is one aspect, and then of course you've got the pollution caused by marine litter, which is something that we're particularly concerned about, mainly because that has impacts on larger marine species like you mentioned. So species like turtles, for example, will eat plastic bags, let's say, that look very much like jellyfish. One of their prey species look like jellyfish as they're floating in the water. And if a turtle eats too many plastic bags, it can block its gut and it will eventually die of starvation. This phenomenon has also been recorded in many species of seabirds, in whales and dolphins, and then other species such as seals are known to get entangled in some discarded fishing net and other marine debris. So discarded fishing litter, plastic litter from the land or thrown into the sea, it is a problem, and it's something that needs to be sorted out. At the Marine Conservation Society, we have a very strong litter program. We actually have thousands of volunteers who clean our beaches, hundreds of beaches, every year, but they also survey what sort of litter is coming up. We run a kind of scientific survey called Beach Watch, and by understanding what sort of litter we're finding on our beaches, we know who the culprits are, and so we can then go to lobby industry and government to tighten up the legislation to try and stop some of these main sources of litter. But I have to say, one of the main sources of litter that we're finding on our beaches is from the beach visitors themselves. And so, you know, it's really up to every single one of us who uses a beach to make sure that we don't contribute to the problem. If we take things to the beach, then any litter that we accumulate, we must take that home and dispose of it responsibly.
You've just touched on two fundamental points. So you spoke of lobbying governments, which is one thing organizations such as your own does. The other thing is individual responsibility. Now, what do you suggest we as individuals do?
Well, one thing that we can do is make sure that we dispose of our litter responsibly. One of the items, another item that we find, not only beach litter that's been left by beach visitors, but we also find various items that have been flushed down the toilet. I'm not sure if this is a problem in the Mediterranean too. I imagine it may be. But essentially, people will flush plastics down the toilet, cotton bud sticks, sanitary towels, that sort of thing. If that goes down the toilet, then our water treatment systems are just not designed to cope with plastics. And plastics are amazing products. You know, they persist in the environment for centuries. And so, of course, this stuff goes through the system untreated, eventually gets washed into the sea, and either gets washed out to sea where certain unfortunate animals might eat it and be impacted in that way, or it washes up on our beach. And who wants to sit on a beach amongst sanitary products? Nobody. So, you know, we all have our part to play. We need to dispose of our litter responsibly, and certainly we shouldn't be flushing these items down the toilet. The other thing we need to do is to be very careful about what sort of fish we eat. We all like fish. I love to eat fish. Seafood is one of my favorite things. But in the UK, we only have a very limited taste, if you like, for certain fish species. And so, of course, these fish species are being absolutely hammered because of the demand being way overfished. And there are other fish species that can sustain more of a take that we don't normally eat. And so I think we need to vary our choices in fish. In fact, if you go to the Marine Conservation Society website, we have a product called Fish Online, which tells you exactly which are the sort of more sustainable fish options to buy and which aren't. And I'd recommend anybody to go to the Marine Conservation Society website to help themselves source sustainable fish species.
Absolutely. Thank you. That is, in fact, very useful. And I'm sure I can join your voice to all naturalists who are calling for protection of the integrity of the planet and of creation. It's the sea, the oceans are such a large part of it, aren't they?
That's right. And we're beginning to, it's not all doom and gloom. We are beginning to realise that. And some countries are sort of way ahead in the way that they protect their seas. Australia, for example, has got incredible regulations and an incredible system and network of marine protected areas, so areas of the seabed where any human activity is managed. Now, these don't necessarily mean that everything is prohibited. You know, some activities at sea do not sustain a huge amount of damage on the marine environment and on the seabed. Some do. So, for example, fishing with very heavy bottom gear, like dredging or trawling heavy gear across the seabed, that can cause a lot of damage. So that sort of activity has to be managed at certain sites where the seabed is sensitive to that damage, and that's been recognised. So I'd say Australia has a good network of marine protected areas where that sort of damaging activity is managed, and other countries are coming on board too. So in the UK, we have England, Scotland, Wales and Northern Ireland, who are all now engaging in processes to establish new marine protected areas around our coastline. And these are vital, and this is something that the Marine Conservation Society it very much supports and we've been lobbying for many years. And hopefully we'll see that it comes to light with a first set of new marine protected areas to be designated in the UK later on this year. Of course, under the European legislation, we already have some marine protected areas designated under the European Habitats Directive. But many governments, although they may have designated these sites, are not managing them effectively according to the spirit of that European directive. And again, this is something we've been particularly concerned about in the way that the UK government has been managing its marine sites. And we've been lobbying hard to change that. And so I think, things are changing. We are seeing some improvement in the way we manage our seas, particularly through the designation of marine protected areas, which are vital, but there's a long way to go. And on World Oceans Day, we'll be promoting these various issues. We'll also be asking people to support us, and anybody can support the Marine Conservation Society simply by going to the website and taking part there. But yes, not only will we be celebrating the progress that we're making, but we'll be highlighting that there is a lot more work to be done to save our seas.